The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 580 WCHS, its employees, or WVRC Media.
Put the power of Peyton on your side. We have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us.
And it's 8:21, and this is Thursday morning, and this is 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. If it's Thursday morning on 580 WCHS, that means the Peyton Law Firm is here of Nitro, as they've been now for nearly two dozen years on Thursday morning. And that means the lines are open. Any questions about the law, 304-345-5858. 304-345-5858. Lines are open. Tom Peyton is with us. Tom, good morning to you.
Morning. Two dozen years. That's, you're really aging me.
You were just a young whippersnapper, a College of Law student when your dad started the show.
Yeah, I was. I think it was my first year.
Yeah, I think
I
it was.
I got thrown in the fire right when I got, I think we waited till I passed the, or got admitted. So, you know, I took the bar in May after I graduated from law school, and then you pass and you get your admission ceremony. I think it was in like the end of October or something of 2001. So, been doing it over 20 years.
Yeah.
Speaking of age, I need to send out a happy birthday wish to somebody that, now my sister Sarah, Rachel Roberts now, lives over in St. Albans. Just, it's her birthday today. So she's younger than me by a couple years. So, I got her a couple years. But no, Sarah's a really good person. I mean, nice person, lives up there on the west side in St. Albans, and you know, where my dad used to live. Actually, where my dad's, well, at least as far back as I remember, I don't know who, but my dad's grandmother lived there.
Okay.
His, my grandfather's mother. Mm-hmm. Then my aunt lived there, and then dad lived there for a number of years. Then Sarah and her husband, Brian, and bought it. It's the old farm place that you know, I worked on when I was in high school. That's what that was my job in high school was. You know, kind of, I think it was probably a farm decades and decades ago. And then so I, in high school, I would recruit a couple buddies and you know, really thinking back on it, wasn't the safest thing in the world, running a chainsaw out there, you know, just cutting the trees down and clearing it back and turning it, putting fence posts up.
Yeah.
You know, which is, if anybody's ever done that, and like the weather like we had yesterday or today, it's pretty taxing. We had a tractor that had an auger on the back that you'd run down, but you know, you get in some of those tight spots on a hill, you got to get the handheld auger, and you hit a root or a rock, and it jerks you around, and some of them you can't get through the rocks. You got to get your spike bar and pound down in there and try and get that fence post down in far enough, and then, you know, corner posts we used our railroad ties, I think, unless we could find old, like, power pole type, because they just last forever. You got to have a strong corner post because it anchors the rest of it. And did all that, and then, you know, turned it back from, you know, basically having no animals on it to a farm. And then I still remember when we got our first, you know, and then Dad had a, I don't know, I guess, kind of a farmhand type guy, blue collar guy, Roger McCoy, that I worked with too, that, I mean, smoked like non-filter Camel cigarettes, and one of those guys, you know, salt earth guys, but knew how to do just about anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Couldn't really read very well, if at all, hardly. So, you know, I was 16, 17-year-old, so if he needed instructions read on something, hand it to me. But we got a lot of stuff done. We went to get the – so we put up this – we were really impressed with our electric fence, you know, high tensile steel wire going all the way around. It's probably 10 acres, something like that. And boy, it was juiced up. So if you weed eating underneath it and a piece of grass or something, you know, grounds you out, boy, you get a pretty good shock. But it's pulsating, so you don't get stuck to it. So,
right,
you
know, right.
But the idea is with animals, like, you know, they go up and touch it. Once they touch it and get hit, they won't go near it again. Well, Roger and I went down to Covington, Kentucky. He's actually a lawyer down there. I forget the fellow's name, but he had like a, you know, thousands of acres. And so there was some Hispanics there working on his farm. So we all went out and rounded up like eight cows and I mean, they lassoed them and got them in the correct, you know, they lasso them and then wrap their end of the rope around a pole or a big post and then keep wrapping it until the cows got close and then got them in the chute. And then we drove all the way back all in one day. Well, we didn't, we should have let them sit in that trailer all night long, but we didn't. So we let them sit for a couple hours and then opened up that door. And then these were like, I mean, they were just like deer. I mean, they've been out running around on their own in thousands and thousands of acres. Yeah. And they were longhorn cattle and Brahma cattle. And so you have the ones with the big horns on the front.
Yeah.
Oh, they just started running around the outside of the fence and just busted through.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're familiar with like West Main Street near the Volunteer Fire Department in St. Albans, they busted. So if you're going out of St. Albans in the West Side Volunteer Fire Department's on the right, our place is up on the left. Mm-hmm. So they busted straight through. One of them stopped in some weeds. One of them ran. We didn't know where it was. We heard a horn honk, and then it just was gone. So I had to go track it down and finally found it down. That's the Cold River backwaters down there.
Yeah.
It goes down into Amandaville. And
right, kind of right,
there.
Right.
So I was trudged through the swamp, finally found it. And there's railroad trestle there. It goes over the Cold River, too. And so it had got... You know, by the time I got down there, there were people standing around it. It was one of the Brahma cows. It was a young one. It wasn't like a 1,000-pounder. You're talking about 300-400 pounds, probably something like that. But apparently, it tried to cross the train trestle to St. Albans, and maybe a policeman was on the other side and kind of shoot it back. Well, it snapped one of its forelegs.
Oh.
You know, it was bad. So it was angry, and of course, if you're from St. Albans, you'd understand, like Amandaville or Rusty, kind of a rough area.
Yeah.
I get down in there. So I was down there with all the local folks. And, you know, of course, one guy claims he knows how to handle cows. So he went up to do, oh, it just butted him right down the, off the railroad track, rolled down the hill. But we didn't, I was new at it. So then, you know, dad comes, you know, he'd been at work or something, I don't know. And then we all,
He had to be called out of the
office. Oh, we had to call. No, eventually we couldn't get it up. Nobody could handle it. Roger came back the trailer out Rust Street, and we ended up having to have the, we've had, my grandma and grandfather had Tennessee walking horses and took them to shows and things like that. So, we were pretty familiar with, I forget the vet's name, maybe McMahon or something, but no, we had to have the vet come out. It was like 1 a.m. And
this is all the same day. This is all the same day.
Oh, yes. All the same day, going all night long. And then, it was really embarrassing. It couldn't get the thing up because you try and grab, even a 300 or 400 pound, you know, if anybody's ever messed with a deer, you know, it's still kicking or alive. You know, they're wild. Animals are strong. And so you go up and try and get this cow and you pull it and somebody get the back, it was going to kick somebody and knock somebody's teeth. That was just embarrassing because the vet comes out and he just goes up with, they have a little pincher that you put in their nose.
Yeah.
You can, and it, you put a chain over one side of the handle, so when you pull the chain, it pulls the kind of pincer tight, and the pincers aren't sharp on it, there's little balls, so he
right.
just goes up and puts it in the thing's nose real quick and pulls it tight and leads it right up onto the trailer. That was it. We've been struggling with it for hours and hours. But anyway, long story back, that's where my sister lives, up there now with her. And she's got, you know, a pig and a couple dogs and some chickens and horse. And I think she still has a couple cows up there.
So it would have been better just to let them kind of settle down a little bit in the trailer.
That's my understanding. rather than driving them on in an old trailer for however long it is from Covington, Kentucky, 3.5 hours.
Did you go all interstate? Do you remember to go 52?
I don't remember. I was only like 17,
18. Okay.
I can't remember what road we went. But, well, yeah, because we'd borrowed the guys. We drove down there and left a car there and then borrowed the fellow that we bought the cattle off of's trailer to drive back. And then Roger had somebody to drive it back, I guess, a couple days later. But, yeah, I think we probably should have let them calm down. You know, it wasn't if I recall correctly, it wasn't one of those steel trailers where you can just barely see through the slats.
Right.
It was, you know, bars. So they're exposed to the elements and everything.
Right.
And then, yes, I think probably it was too late by then. I don't know what we should have done for sure, but I'm thinking we should have left them back that trailer down in the field and let them sit there for overnight or something, giving them water and food. But But the high tensile great electric fence it doesn't work when somebody just smashes through it, or an animal smashes through it, and then the whole thing's down because it just pulls out and it's grounded. So we learned that lesson the hard way too. So we went back after that and had to run strands of barbed wire, and eventually that electric fence is good. I think it needs to be a supplemental thing or a small enclosure because it's just impossible to. Unless you have a crew working every day, you can't maintain it because it gets grounded out. If you get a stick against it or something, it'll ground it out sometimes. A limb falls on it, and then it doesn't work anymore. And anybody can get through it. But it was good for keeping out, like, if you got a pack of dogs or something trying to run the horses or the cattle, they'll nip that, and they won't come back again once they hit it, unless they learn that they can. But, no, it was a complete... another failure, but it's a story that I can still tell 20-some years from now.
So that's the way we started the show, and we're going to take our first break because Tom told us that to tell his sister happy birthday.
So that's right. So now how I got to started with her, and I'm back with her. So yeah. Happy birthday, Sarah. Really good person. Anybody sees her out? She works for the VA as a social worker in palliative care, I believe, and today she's heading to Huntington, I think, to do some work. But we're going to go have some dinner tonight, I think, at River's Edge Cafe there in St. Albans.
Okay, good. All right, Sarah, happy birthday. It's 8:32. Lines are open. Tom Payton's here. Payton Law Firm and Nitro, 304-345-5858. Back in a moment.
I never thought it would happen to me.
I never thought this could happen to me.
And then?
It did.
It did.
It did. It did. We need a response unit to Shepherd and Fifth Ward.
We live life as though these types of life-altering incidents will never happen to us. Until they do.
Payton Law Firm, handling injury and wrongful death claims arising from any type of accident. Fighting for your life, your compensation, and ultimately, your peace of mind. PaytonLawFirm.com.
For 20 days only, both locations of Todd Judy Ford will be the location of a bank asset liquidation sale.
We have 127 vehicles with special permission to liquidate these assets to the public on a first-come, first-served basis.
Vehicles are available in all payment and price ranges. Just pay the $95 acquisition fee and assume the payment, or we can negotiate a new loan for you with a lower payment.
This event is only good for 20 days or until the inventory is gone.
Go to ToddJudyFord.com or our Facebook page for information.
It's a cheese lover's delight at IHOP with the new extra cheesy omelets, and they're this week's 50-50 Friday. These new omelets are loaded with up to three different types of cheese and all of your other favorite ingredients, from bacon to hash browns. And don't forget about IHOPPY Hour starting at 3 p.m. every day, a menu full of delicious IHOP favorites for just $6. Where the shortest distance between two people is a smile, IHOP. Friday at 9 a.m., go to WCHSnetwork.com and click the 50-50 Friday button to get 50% off gift certificates for IHOP, courtesy of the WCHS family of networks.
Put the power of Payton on your side. We have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us. Put the power of Payton on your side. The power of
It's 8:35 on 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Tom Payton here, the Payton Law Firm in Nitro. And if you turned in early, when I worked at WAJR for years in Morgantown, we used to have a show. It came on at 6:30 in the morning. It was called Ask Asel, the county extension agent. He would come on and talk about farm advice.
I'm certainly not qualified to. I could probably use some advice still. But,
well, Tom's here. Any questions about the law is open. 304-345-5858. Last week we were in here and we were right in the heat of the Joshua Phillips murder trial. Mm-hmm. And talked to Harvey about that. And then the jury got the case on Thursday afternoon, deliberated all day Friday, came back Monday, and by early Monday afternoon, it reached a verdict. And it wasn't first-degree murder. It was second-degree murder, right, and then the conviction on the drug possession charge. But so he got convicted of murder, but not the murder that the prosecution—
Interesting, because it all kind of you remember, it was Flo, and they had a little trouble picking the jury. I think initially had to come back. And, you know, the defense is really arguing hard for a change of venue. They thought there had been too much publicity for him to get a fair trial here. But I think they picked a jury relatively easily. I mean, maybe a day or a day and a half of going through jurors. Yeah. And you'd be surprised. Usually, you know, I had the only case I've really had where we had to do individual voir dire, where we had to bring jurors back individually and ask them. I had a case, you know, back against Jack Whitaker. When a young man, I call him a kid, but I guess depends on what age you consider an adult, maybe 19, had died in his home back when there was some drug use going on. And we had to bring, you know, it was 07, and he'd won the lottery in like, I don't know, 02 or 03, something like that. So we had to bring back jurors for individual voir dire, and we thought it would be difficult to get a jury because so much, you know, he'd been in the news for not just winning the lottery, but he had a whole litany of issues, I guess you would say. And we were able to get a jury picked in a day, though, and in this Phillips thing, you should be surprised because you do the news. I pay attention to the news, and I have some time to do that. It's, I think as a lawyer doing what I do, you really need to keep abreast at least of what's going on in the community and nationally and around the world to a certain extent. But, you know, a lot of people that, you know, have jobs and things and other things that are just preoccupied, and they're not really keeping up with it. I think you'd be surprised when you went out and just ask the general public about, you know, news stories and stuff, what they, you know, well, I may have heard about it, but they don't know any details from the media. They haven't really formed opinions, and that's really the key, not whether they've heard about the issue or not. It's whether they can be fair and impartial. And they got a jury picked and then tried a case. I think it was, I know Michelle Drummond was one of the ones trying. I've tried cases with her before when she was when she's serving as prosecutor, and she's very good, very professional. She streamlines the case, in my opinion. She doesn't stretch, meaning she doesn't try and get borderline evidence in, because she's smart enough to know that you don't want a bunch of appeals following up or habeas. You know, this thing can drag on for years. And you have to redo it all. So at least that's the way I found her in my cases, and it's probably the way she handled this one as well. But anyway, present her case. I think the defense, you know, when this first happened, I thought, you know, this is just heinous, and, you know, you figure the guy's just going to get the max. But when it first happened, I wondered, well, but if it's just him and her and there are no witnesses, and he's saying self-defense or some justification, you know, or excuse, if you see it that way, how are they going to prove it? Because, it's hard when you don't have any witnesses seeing it happen. It's a one-on-one interaction. You can do, you know, you got forensics, ballistics, angle of bullets, autopsy showing injury. But of course, as the trial came out, we learned that, you know, there was, I guess, body cam footage where she was wearing a camera on her body. There, I think there may be some dash cam footage too from the vehicle and audio with some of that. I know you had the audio. I listened to you and Hoppy when you were playing the audio. I found it not conclusive. You know, I thought it was compelling for the state, really. But, you know, it wasn't compelling in and of itself, and neither were the videos, because the state apparently had to take still pictures of certain things in order to, like, I didn't see any of the videos or the pictures, but I guess they had him putting his hand over her hand on the holster, maybe, which was an attempt, apparently, or at least it was construed as an attempt to keep her from accessing her firearm. And they had a picture of him with his firearm in his belt.
Yeah, and him pulling it out.
And him pulling it out.
And cocking it. Yeah.
So, and then, you know, you got the whole interaction between, and I think, as I understood it, he was, you know, when she tried to, I don't know if she was arresting him. You know, you don't have to be.
She was trying
That's a nuance, but she was trying to
get cuffs on him.
Yes, get cuffs on him for officer safety. I mean, that's different to me than putting somebody under arrest. You know, you can temporarily, at least the law sees a difference, and I see a difference in my mind. You can temporarily restrain somebody for officer safety if they're, you know, behaving in a dangerous manner, or they're trying to access their car, for example, and fiddle around with it when there's suspicion they're on drugs or something like that, or they're, so she, I think she was just going to cuff him, and then, you know, she may never have arrested the guy. I mean, she could have done a pat down of his pockets, but that's supposed to be for weapons, not to find small number of pills in a bag. I mean, that's, you know, it's very factual specific. She may never have arrested the guy. And he's, I don't know, he's saying he doesn't want to go to jail because I think he references COVID or something, which I just, I don't know. It's hard to go back in time to back then when COVID was hot, but I just thought that was one of those.
So you think it's probably a compromise verdict because a couple people didn't see it?
Well, I don't know necessarily because my thought was as the little bit I heard on WV Metro News, I thought, well, this, you know, she's a female. She's not a law enforcement officer. He's bigger than her. He had a gun. Whether she had a right to cuff him or not, I don't know if that's even real relevant, meaning reasonable suspicion or probable cause. But I just thought, listen to that, it jury wouldn't take 3 or 4 or 5 hours probably and convict him of first degree. After they went, you know, of course, Thursday evening, and then they're mostly through Friday, I thought, well, they're thinking about something. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think the mayor and then some law enforcement were disappointed in the verdict. But when you look at it, you know, you got to have premeditation, which there's some case law that says basically premeditation can be formed in an instant before
right.
it happens.
Right.
You know, and the jury's read that in jury instruction. And you also, you're generally, if you're the aggressor, you know, the jury's told that an aggressor can't, the initial aggressor generally doesn't have the right to have a self-defense claim. And so that's what the prosecutor was arguing. Well, he was the aggressor, so he can't even have a self-defense claim, which the jury didn't. I don't think they bought the self-defense argument because that's kind of an absolute defense.
Mm-hmm.
But they just found that it wasn't premeditated. And when you look back at the evidence, it kind of makes sense because – you know, he didn't go. It doesn't appear that he went out there with the intent to shoot her. He got, you know, he was trying to move his car, maybe, or I don't know what he was doing. But he was, you know, initially the complaint was illegally parked
right.
or something. Probably also with the extra information, this is a drug house or something like that. That's what I got out of it. And you know, maybe it's just a real quick situation, intense, and she's going to pull her gun when he won't let her cuff him, and then he does the same thing and just bang bang. And so you could see how a jury could say, well, that's, you know, we don't think there was premeditation there, which is really the difference between first. And then if they also found that he didn't possess those, he had like 60 Klonopin pills or mm-hmm. something like that. So they were arguing it's a felony if you possess those with the intent to distribute. It's a misdemeanor if you just possess them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the jury found simple possession,
right,
which is a misdemeanor, so therefore it wasn't a killing and during the commission of a felony. So that saved him from, I think that also saved him from first degree murder. So, you know, people don't like it. I mean, I think both, you know, this Phillips guy's mother was upset. She thought it was self-defense and thought he should have got off. And then, of course, you got Cassie Johnson's mother who's just upset. I think she said she was speechless from the verdict. She thought it should be first degree. But, you know, jurors are told, you know, you can't make your decisions on emotion and that kind of thing. And obviously, everybody has emotion, and here's the evidence that comes into play. But it sounds like they did. I mean, the system worked in that they obviously thought about it. It appears the fellow got a fair trial. Now, all these arguments about venue, that does leave it open. You know, they'll be able to appeal whether the judge properly denied the change of venue. I don't think it'll do any good, especially in light of the fact the jury was out for, you know, I guess 2 days almost, right, when you add all the time together and then did not give him the mic. So it certainly doesn't appear they were overwhelmed with bias to me, but I guess we'll see what the Supreme Court says. But any event, so now he's guilty of, I think misdemeanor possession is mm-hmm. simple possession might be up to 6 months in jail. And then second degree murder is between 10 and 40 years, but it's mm-hmm. what you call a determinate sentence. So it's not, some sentences are, I sentence you to 10 to 40 years. And you just serve somewhere in that time frame, and then you're eligible for parole after 10 years, or I think it's 1/4 of the maximum, something like that. But this one, the judge will pick a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm guessing that it'll be 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will have to serve 10, and then he'll be eligible for parole, as I understand.
He can go up for parole at that time.
Yeah. yeah.
If she gives him 40.
Will he get it? I don't know. But I think he would, what they call, kill the sentence, because you get, as long as he behaves, I think even for this type crime, I could be wrong because I haven't done one of these in a while, but I think you get one day of good time for every day you're in. So, and it comes off the off your, well, if it's a determinant, it just comes off your sentence. So if the judge gives him 40 years, he will be discharged. He'll fulfill his sentence in 20. Yeah, and be out. So
okay, so when he's 59, basically.
Yeah, I don't know how, is it, he's 39?
I think he's 39.
Yeah, so that's, then she can tack on the extra 6 months if she wants to make them consecutive sentences, one and the other one. But, yeah, that's how the sentence will. Now, have they set sentencing yet?
She has not. She had not sent the date.
Okay, well, see, they'll do, the defense has a right to file post-trial motions. I think it's within 10 business days after the verdict. And so they might have to go back and argue those before sentencing, and then they'll do sentencing and
pre-sentence investigation.
And yeah, pre-sentence investigation where a probation officer puts together information about him and his history and criminal record and that kind of thing and presents it to the judge, and then they'll have a sentencing hearing where the judge will decide. But I don't know anything about the fellow other than what's been reported in this trial, but I'm, you know, I think it's probably pretty decent, but it'll be a 40-year sentence in my opinion.
Yeah, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Any questions about the law? Tom Payton is here with the Payton Law Firm in Nitro. A couple of things going on. One that we're following at WVMetroNews.com. Pretty interesting. It's in another part of the state. It's over in Hardy County area. Circuit Judge over there, Carter Williams.
Yeah.
It's kind of up on an ethics. What's an ethics here?
Yeah, it's a judicial investigation commission investigation. So that's like lawyers are subject to their ethics panels, like lawyer disciplinary board, mm-hmm. and then that's the equivalent for judges. So if there's an ethical issue, then that's where they address it. And I guess I didn't realize this, but the hearing levels I think are public. So we've been able to see people that have. Testimony and things like that. And you said there was a video uploaded of some interaction.
I haven't seen that yet. A traffic stop.
I'll go back and watch it. But basically, he's a circuit judge, so that's as high as you go for on the county level as far as judges. He deals with almost every felony criminal case and misdemeanors that come before him, etc. But I think this complaint against him is in relation to one of the local officers was going. Pulled him over and had an issue because he had a cellular phone in his hand. And I think the judge's contention was he just dropped it. He wasn't using it or something. But I think by all accounts, he then, as soon as the officer approaches the vehicle, he just berates the officer and yells at him and stuff that is entirely unreasonable. And, of course, then you're getting into it. Was he trying? And then he also made a series of communications right there after with
he did like, while the officer's in the car.
Yeah, like the officer's maybe superior and then other, like maybe I think it was a municipal officer, so it was a city policeman. Yeah, I think he called like the mayor.
Then like a former chief he called. And
went to he went to somebody's house like 10 o'clock at night that evening to address the situation. It what it does is implies an attempt to intimidate. And so he would be treated differently than others. And
well, first thing he said, I watched the video last night. Okay. First thing he said was, "Why are you stopping me? I'm Judge Williams."
Right. that's all it tells you, and then it goes from there. But so he's using his position in an attempt. The implication is an attempt to influence the outcome of.
So he's apologized, right? He did so on the
stand yesterday. Well, I think he ran into the officer that he had the confrontation with in the hallway and apologized. Now, why it took till now, I don't know. But we'll see how it comes out. There's been a couple of circuit judges that have testified. There was a judge. I've never been in front of any of these judges as far as I can recall. Certainly haven't been up there if they were a special appointed specially for some reason, and maybe I have, but it was Judge Carl said he thought Judge Williams, the one that's subject of the disciplinary proceeding, is really good judge and just must have had a really, really bad day. But then Judge Cookman, I think, is maybe the one that reported it, and he was, saw some of this. I think he was called by someone else up there and thought he needed to report it because he thought it was maybe an ethics violation. So that's playing out. We'll see how it goes. He could be suspended. I don't think they can, quote, remove him. but they can just, if the rules are still the same, because we had a particular judge in Putnam County that was subject to this, and what they did was they basically, for each offense, I think you can only suspend for so long, but you can make those suspensions back to back to back to back. So if they find multiple violations, I believe they can suspend him.
Oh, for the effect for the rest of his term.
Right. That's what happened with the other judge in Putnam County. They didn't, and then he ultimately just resigned because you're still a judge and you can't practice law while you're a judge. And so I think the judge in Putnam County, I think, took disability retirement or something, had some health problems. But, they might be able – or, you know, they can do something in between, sanction. I don't know if I think he's temporarily suspended maybe. I'm not sure while the proceeding's going on. But if I recall correctly from reading some of the old Metro News stories, there were maybe some other issues, too, with Judge Williams. Like, I thought there was some unusual, like, allegations of shoplifting or something, you know, on two different occasions where some items were taken – you know, in his shopping cart, and he left with them and claims he forgot they were in there, which, you know, that can happen. But then it happened again, I think, fairly recently, which is maybe why it hasn't come to fruition yet. I don't know if it's being brought up in these hearings, but, like, after he was already under investigation, and if I recall correctly, it's something like maybe over $100 worth of items, like, he had in his cart at, I don't know, Walmart or somewhere like that, and just walked out without paying for him, which I thought was weird to have that happen twice, and the second time while you're under investigation and being monitored in a way, and then the cost of the items. It's the most recent one, I don't think it was like he'd left one item in his cart. You do self-checkout, you can definitely get confused on that.
So this panel will come down for some decision, and the Supreme Court's the ultimate.
That's right. Yeah, there'll be. I think the Supreme Court has to sign off on it one way or another. So there'll be some recommendation by the hearing panel. Maybe the judge agrees with it. But that all, I believe, has to then be sent to the West Virginia Supreme Court. And then they don't have to go with the finding by the hearing panel, even if, you know, I've seen multiple ones with lawyers where the Supreme Court sets it for oral argument and makes everyone brief it, even though both sides, they didn't reach a settlement agreement, but the disciplinary committee will say X, and the lawyer subject to it will agree with X. But when it gets to the Supreme Court, they say, nah, we want to address this. And so it may ultimately get there one way or another. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I don't know about time frames or anything like that. And I haven't heard anything about those shoplifting instances coming up, but I think there was an ethics issue with that within the last 6 months or so. So we'll see if that comes into play or not. I don't know why they can't just absorb it into this one and address it all at one time.
So I think the hearing is supposed to – it's going again today, and this should be the last day of it.
Yeah, so it's interesting that it's public.
Yeah.
That you can – a lot of times on the – I don't know about the lawyer ones. I know that when, you know, they get to the Supreme Court level, once they – if they set it for some type of oral argument, then you can see the briefs online, so you can go check them and read them and get some details of what the allegations were.
It's 8:54 on 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. Tom Payton's with us at the Payton Law Firm in Nitro. Number to call, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Another story that we covered recently, and we just got a couple minutes here, and then we'll get close to wrapping up the show, is the awful death of Sean McGinley.
Yeah,
the traffic death, and there's a civil lawsuit by his estate against AEP because it was their pole digging truck that came across the median up in Braxton County.
Yeah, tire blew out of it.
Yeah, and hit him, and so the allegation is there was no pre. It was going to an auction. There's no pre-auction inspection, but interesting hearing that I listened into last week before Judge Tabbitt, the AEP. AEP wanted the venue changed to Braxton County.
Right.
Or maybe even to Harrison County because that's where the truck was going, or to Braxton County, and they had made the claim that AEP had made the claim that the estate had not properly hooked AEP
to
Kanawha County.
Business conducts in Kanawha County.
But she ruled against that.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you watch for on those venue cases is when I think what judges watch for is there really – just gross forum selection where
is this a stretch or not a stretch?
McDowell County, for example, used to be, maybe still is, you know, pretty favorable, you know, venue for the plaintiff's side. And so you get people filing cases down there where it's, you know, it's a stretch to say that, you know, this business doesn't have an office in the state. You know, maybe they mail their product or ship it here, but, you know, they don't have a factory here or a name distributor here. And so they're looking to see. But, I mean, it's, I didn't think that would get anywhere. Actually, I thought it got farther into that argument than really needed to be, but because AAP obviously has numerous contacts with Kanawha County and does business here significantly. So I didn't think there was any real issue with venue. But, yeah, you know, if a judge sees, you know, well, there's really no contact hardly at all between this defendant and this county. It's not that Western jurisdiction is a little bit different, you know, whether the court even has jurisdiction because there's not enough contacts, but venue is just which county you're supposed to be in. It's not that it can't be in West Virginia. And they're looking at contacts and things like that. I'd say, you know, normally that cases are filed where if it's an automobile collision, a lot of times it will be filed in the county where the collision happens because right. you always have venue there. But, I mean, there could be multiple counties that would be proper venue. But because the plaintiff initiates the lawsuit, they can select the venue they want.
Yeah, there's some deference.
Yeah, they can select the venue they want as long as it's an appropriate venue. But because they can do that, court's got to be a little careful and make sure, hey, you know, are there sufficient contacts to even have this case down here? And I think what judges are looking at is this just a gross attempt to, you know, stretch the contacts so that you can have a favorable court for the plaintiff. And I don't think that's anywhere. I don't think it's anywhere close to that standard for AEP in Kanawha County. I can't imagine it would be. And I read, you know, they come down and have hearings for the PSC. And I mean, there was a couple examples that I saw maybe in your article.
Right.
But, you know, that, they weren't going to get anywhere with that.
Right. All right. A couple minutes left here, Tom. 90 seconds. Peyton Law Firm in Nitro.
Yeah. Give us a call if you want to. We didn't get any calls today, I guess, but you can call us at the office, 304-755-5556. You can certainly stop in. We're at 2801 right on First Avenue there. Convenient location. If we're available, we'll talk to you. And, you know, we've got pretty proud of our staff. You know, we have some longevity with our staff, so a lot of them can really answer most of your questions. And if they can't, they'll refer it back to me. So if you have a general question, and you can connect with us through our website, PeytonLawFirm.com, which is a really good way. If you have a general inquiry or something, you're sitting there of the evening and think, well, I want to ask about this, you can send an email and it goes right to me and to Dad, and one or the two of us or both of us will, unless we tell you that we're going to. So if you have a question, but, you know, I guess our bread and butter probably, we're trial lawyers. We do a lot of civil litigation on the consumer or plaintiff side. So if you or a family member have been hurt or, you know, have a wrongful death, unfortunately, or something like that, or a dispute with an insurance company, give us a call because I think we do a really good job, and we like trying cases and building up to trial is how you get cases settled.
All right, Tom, good seeing you.
You too.
Appreciate it. Tom Peyton of the Peyton Law Firm in Nitro. Again, their number, 304-755-5556. 304-755-5556, PeytonLawFirm.com. ABC News is next. Carrie Hudasik with local news and 580 Live on 580 WCHS.
WCHS-AM, W243-DRFM Charleston, and W283-AQ Crosslanes, a WVRC media station. We're proud to live here, too.
From ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Signs point to a rough open for Wall Street. Dow futures were down more than 500 points overnight after Wednesday's announcement from Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. The central bank is going to raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage point to try to slow inflation.
We have both the tools we need and the resolve that it will take to restore price stability on behalf of American families and businesses.
He called the hike unusually large, but also said another increase of a half to three quarters of a point is possible this summer. Parents of small children have been waiting for them to become eligible for COVID-19 vaccines. They're now a step